Hello and welcome to React Native Radio, episode 40. Today on our panel, we have Kevin Old.
Hello.
Ali Najafizadeh.
Hello, guys.
Gant Laborde.
Hello.
I'm your host, Nader Dabit. And today, our special guest is Eric Vicente from Facebook. And we're going to be talking about the navigation component in React Native. Kind of, we're going to be going over the old navigator, but we're going to really be trying to dig into the new navigator and just, you know, ask a bunch of questions and kind of hear about how that's going. So, Eric, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Yeah, we've been really wanting to have you on here for a while. I've always been really, you know, interested in the navigation with React Native coming from the web. It's been
sure.
Kind of, you know, interesting to see this new paradigm and also watch the project, you know, mature and change and see all the stuff that you guys are doing. So yep. It's really exciting to have you on.
Thanks. Yeah, no, it's kind of the Wild West out here with navigation. It's a whole new world with React Native, where it's kind of all in your domain, right?
I guess before we get into all of that stuff, can you kind of go over how you got into programming in general, and then how you got into working with React Native, and I guess working at Facebook?
Sure, absolutely. I really got into programming at a very young age, and I was basically discovering it for myself. And I was sort of stumbling upon it, you know, as a kid with a computer, figuring out that you can, you know, make these HTML files and put them on web servers and show them to your friends. And I was trying to get my friends all excited about that, but for some reason, I had troubles sort of exciting a lot of my peers. But as I grew older, I realized that this programming skill is you know, super super handy. And through the years, just in my sort of spare time, I had progressed from, you know, doing HTML and CSS and started getting into a little bit of JavaScript, but mostly doing PHP back in the day. And I eventually tinkered on with other things like Python. But my main focus for pretty much my whole programming career has been JavaScript. I got into React back sort of my first Silicon Valley startup job, which was Trapit. And there were some really young and exciting forward-thinking engineers there who were looking to what the, you know, the future of web development is going to be. And React sort of stuck out right away. And when I first saw it, like everyone else, I was kind of shocked at the JSX, and I was a little bit taken aback. But after working with it for just about a week, like it really clicked with me. And we took our React app into production, which was a really exciting time because that was one of the first projects that I had ever taken to production all the way. And then Facebook, eventually I moved on and started thinking about, you know, what would be like the best big company that I could possibly work for. And I'm really happy I wound up at Facebook. And they were quite excited that I had had some experience using React in production, because at the time, this was 2 years ago, but that was still relatively rare. So I've just been loving it ever since, because when I arrived at Facebook, you know, there's this program where they sort of have you looking around for what team you want to join, figuring out where you can be the most effective. And I stumbled into React Native at an early stage, and I was just so excited. I was just really blown away by the fact that here I was, a web developer who was pretty much scared off from native programming for a lot of my life. It was pretty terrifying to me because, you know, all this complexity and extra sort of proprietary information that I had to keep in my head. And I just was so excited by React Native, and I managed to get on the team and help open source the first version of it last year. So since then, I've been working on some navigation libraries for React Native, trying to make that better for everybody to use. And I've been working on a handful of React Native products at Facebook.
So that's interesting that you kind of came from the web and into React Native as someone that's kind of building out the actual framework. So how much like native stuff have you had to know to actually be able to dig in there and create some of these APIs and stuff like that?
Well, some of the native APIs are actually pretty easy to build. So even though I didn't have too much experience with Objective-C, I was able to flesh some of these things out. But a lot of my effort has really been on the JavaScript side of the universe and making it so that it can be more sane to actually develop in iOS and Android, and then eventually, you know, develop in web as well with the same code base.
I guess let's go ahead and dig into the navigation stuff. So can you kind of go into, you know, what the current state of navigation experimental is, and kind of the, ideas and things that have gone into building it, and why you kind of have switched away from the old Navigator to this new Navigator?
Sure. Yeah. I think I would probably have to go back a little bit and explain some of the history here, explain sort of what Navigator is and why we have it. And one of the interesting things that most people don't know is actually way back in the day, before React Native was open source and before these things were actually called Navigator and Navigator iOS, these things were in competition. So the native iOS navigation stack, we were considering using that for Ads Manager. But there was this competing implementation, which basically mimicked the same API. So it had the same imperative API commands, like, you know, push and whatnot. And that implementation was actually sort of going alongside to see if we can get the Navigator to perform as, you know, pretty much on par with the native navigation. And ultimately, we were so excited by how flexible the JavaScript-based Navigator allowed us to be. It allowed us to customize the animations and the gestures and do really crazy animations in the headers, like the breadcrumb effect that you see in Ads Manager. We were just really excited by all this. Ultimately, the JavaScript Navigator won out, and it won out pretty much as I was joining the Ads Manager project at the time. And so we went forward with Navigator. And it's a really complicated piece of code. It does a lot of good things well, but then it also has a lot of complexity and nuance that we sort of had to get around. And it works really well in your application until you start needing multiple of them in one application. And that's the situation that we came across with Ads Manager, where we had to manually coordinate a lot of different navigation throughout our application, right? Instead of the normal React, declarative way of doing things, where you sort of pass props down so it's very clear to see what's happening at any time, we weren't passing props down. We were sending messages across the application and coordinating these, complicated navigations. The other thing is Navigator is very difficult to maintain because it has a lot of logic all in one piece. It was one of the first things that we ever animated with React Native. So the animated library that we all sort of know and love today and is currently being optimized to, run super smoothly, that library hadn't existed yet. So we couldn't have possibly done anything else other than manually write a bunch of animation code into the Navigator. So this one component was handling the navigation logic, and it was sort of coordinating all these different views and also running the animations and the gestures for these views. So this thing got super complicated, and we kind of knew at the time when we started to open source React Native that this wasn't the most ideal thing. That it was imperative. We didn't quite like the API, and it was pretty difficult to maintain, but we knew that the community really needed something here. We knew that there couldn't just not be a story for navigation. And we open sourced Navigator iOS as well, sort of the native thing that had been in competition with it. But it wasn't really what we were supporting. So we decided to just open source what we were actually using in production. And that was Navigator. But all of these pains that we felt from it really motivated me to release Navigation Experimental about a year later. So hopefully that provides a little bit of context about why Navigator exists the way it is, and it works well for a lot of people. But these sort of growing pains that we had with it really pushed us towards working on Navigation Experimental. And late last year, Brent Vatney and James Ide from Exponent were visiting Facebook, and I was hanging out with them a little bit. And they were talking about how they wanted to optimize the Navigator so that it would run the animations on the main thread, so that the animations can be super smooth. And I knew how complicated Navigator was and how terrible it would be if they spent so much time optimizing this really crufty component in comparison to optimizing the animated library such that every animation would be smooth and fast. So I really wanted Exponent to invest in optimizing the animated library. So I was like, wait, no, don't use Navigator. I will bang something out that is going to basically allow you to ship your app using the animated libraries so that we can optimize the right thing here and we can move forward.
So I guess you kind of just started from scratch on this new, on the experimental, just everything is kind of a whole new, I guess, paradigm or ideology as far as how the routes are kind of, or how the routing is done, or can you kind of maybe go into some of the major differences, I guess, between the two?
Sure. I guess the biggest difference is that with Navigation Experimental, you're not actually keeping the state of navigation inside of the view itself. The view is stateless. You're basically, like any other React component, you're just providing props to tell it what to display. So it's, in a way, the new navigation stuff is basically just a couple of components. It's not this sort of fancy navigation routing library. They're just views. And the question is, now, what extra logic do you need to implement in order to make up for this loss of actual functionality? Because the navigator, for all its faults, it was quite easy to use because, you know, it's pretty straightforward. You tell it to push, you tell it to pop, and it takes care of it. But in this case, you need to manage the pushing and the popping yourself. You're going to basically first, at one point, render your navigation card stack and say, you know, it has two routes, and now it's going to render both of those routes. And then you're going to push the third route. So you're just going to re-render it with three routes, and you're going to change the index to be the newest, to point to the latest route. And that's basically how the push is going to happen. And inside of the view, it's going to manage the animation, and it'll manage the gesture that you might want to do if you want to gesture when swiping back. But the actual ownership of knowing what are the current routes that we're displaying, that's no longer in the navigator. So that's actually up to you as the application developer to decide. So it's not great because you have to do a little bit extra work, but it is good because now our concerns are decoupled, and whatever comes to really do that work, it's going to be a little bit better suited to do it because it's not going to be living inside of your view.
So in React world, we do actually have something called React Router, and I'm pretty sure everyone knows about it.
Yeah.
Have you actually looked at their API? Because it would be really, because from my perspective, like when I'm actually writing in React.js at the web, and then I want to do it in a native side, and now I have to actually look in a different API that I'm not used to, and then I have to actually understand the native side. Would it be like, are you going to actually support some sort of like a feature in the future that might be similar to the React Router, or there is no plan for it, or maybe, well, do you understand what I'm trying to say? It's kind of like,
sure. Yeah, no, you've got a very real concern where a lot of the people in the open source community, you know, building React on the web, you know, everyone's adopted React Router these days. And it's not fun to have to relearn a different API and have all of these different concerns with compatibility. But like I said, Navigation Experimental is basically just the views. It's not going to quite handle that level of stuff. But the good news for you is there actually is a library by Jake Murphy, and he's recently just promoted it to today, actually. And it's called React Router Native. And it's basically, it's built on top of Navigation Experimental. It allows you to use these same views and customize the gestures and animations and whatnot. But it gives you an API that's similar to React Router, which I think is really helpful for a lot of people coming from the web world and want to have some consistency in this regard.
Okay. I will check it out. Thanks.
Yeah. There are a small handful of libraries that are built on top of these navigation components. And the other big one, in addition to React Router Native, is X-Navigation, right? So there's Navigation Experimental, and then there's X-Navigation, built by Exponent and Adam Skevowitz, or just at Skevy. You know, we really apologize for the naming here, because this is pretty disastrous, where there's Navigation Experimental and X Navigation, but again, that provides a slightly easier to use API on top of the base components that are provided.
So, when was React Router Native? You said that was just open source, like recently.
Actually, I've seen him developing it for a little while. Yeah, it's literally just React Router Native. I'm pretty sure on NPM as well as GitHub. It's nice because it does provide a similar API. Although I do have a couple of gripes with the sort of the way that React Router encourages you to encode your entire navigation state inside of your path. I really think that your URL should really be more of an action that goes into your application rather than trying to keep all of your navigation state inside of the path. And that's what the React Router API kind of encourages, right? I can go into a little bit more detail about that if you'd like.
Well, so that's actually an interesting point I'd like to bring up. So a lot of developers are coming to React Native from a web background, like myself, and I'm used to URLs. And right. When I first encountered the navigator, it was a different paradigm than I was used to. And what have you? What are your thoughts on bringing web developers over into this approachable? You know, React Native has React components that are approachable. And but there are paradigms that are different. So what's your thought about bringing them along? And then, you know, this attempt at trying to bridge a URL into, you know, what's not really, you know, right for URLs. I mean, it's an app, right? What are your thoughts on?
Yeah, there's two things for the most part. For one, we just need to understand what the URL is. Is it some state that we're trying to keep a, and like what sort of what do we really keep in our state? Is it super important to keep the state of another tab that we're not actually in our navigation state? Well, on an iOS app, right, you might do some navigation within one tab and then leave tabs and come back, and you'd expect that navigation is still there, right? But in web, you know, if you do some navigation inside of a tab, switch tabs and then switch back, you haven't kept the state of that other tab because it wasn't reflected in the URL. So I would really encourage people, or really ask and investigate, ask yourself if your URLs, you know, the representation of the, you know, your current navigation state saying where you are exactly, or is it an action that says, here's how you get to a particular place. And I would really like to propose really that it's an action rather than the actual state. The other real interesting thing that you brought up is that it seems like the paradigms are somewhat conflicting between web and native. And I really agree that we haven't really been addressing this problem very holistically. We've had a lot of people in the web world who are fixing navigation for web, and they've got a really, like, there's a really great API there that works really well for people. And we've also got the native world where, you know, there are a lot of these, you know, swirling concerns and similar pieces here, but there's no real cohesive story to how can you navigate between web and native. If you have a piece of shared code that works both on web and on native, what does that look like? So one of the things that I'm really interested in investigating is exposing the complexity of the situation to people so that we can actually start addressing this more holistically and we can solve the real problem of navigation as it is. So the project that I've been working on as of late isn't so much intimately tied with navigation, but it does sort of expose some design constraints around how we want to build our navigation system. And basically, all I've built is a version of a React Create app that's kind of combined with React Native in it. So it allows you to very quickly start developing some code and run that code on the browser and on native. So this is something I've been pretty excited about just for this past week. And what's mostly exciting about it to me is that it's going to expose the real complexity of a React Native or a React application when it comes to navigation. So we'll hopefully, you know, once we start, you know, hacking on this together, hopefully a solution will emerge for routing that works both on native and on web, because we really don't want to constrain ourselves. We need to build a system that's going to work in these wide variety of cases.
So if that happened, would you take Navigator Experimental and then call it Navigator and then come up with a new Navigator Experimental and then take the old Navigator and call it something else or what? Actually, that is another point. Yeah. Like, what are you guys going to do about these naming conventions once Navigator Experimental does become like the Navigator?
It's tough. I wish someone could solve the naming constraints for me, because like it's an important thing to decide. But at the same time, what really matters to me is that, you know, we're providing sort of a clear story of how to do things. And that's where it's causing a lot of people's confusion, is because we've got these, you know, weird naming of various things. But ultimately, I'm questioning whether Navigation Experimental belongs in React Native at all, because, like I said, it should be able to work just fine on web. And in that case, then you really shouldn't be depending on React Native for it. And this is already a problem that React Native Web has, where, like, really you want a package like Leland Richardson's React Primitives, where instead of requiring things out of React Native, because that's kind of like saying, like, this is the runtime, this is the environment, you're going to require specific things like Vue out of the requirements, so that on web, it really doesn't make any sense that you're importing from React Native and we have this alias to React Native Web. Ideally, your Vue would come out of React Primitives, as well as things like Style Sheet and Text and Animated, because these things should work both on web and on native. And then these components, which depend on the primitives, can be used from web or from native without difficulty. So right now, I've nicknamed my project React Anywhere, and it's currently available on NPM. Right now, React Anywhere doesn't use Leland's primitives, but ultimately, I think that it should, so that we can really have portable components between our web apps and our native apps.
So this is another interesting conversation about, you know, what you're talking about as far as sharing between web and mobile. So can you kind of go into what is React Primitives? This is the first time I've actually heard of this, but I just checked out the NPM repo and the GitHub repo, and it looks pretty interesting. Can you kind of go into like what, you know, the use case is there?
Sure, yeah. I mean, the philosophy is that you really don't want to be depending on primitives that are provided by your native environment, right? So if a component is supposed to work on native and on web, it would be a little silly for it to be pulling its primitives, like the view and the style sheet and the animated. It would be a little silly to be pulling those primitives out of React Native when this component needs to go on web. So we kind of have a broken dependency there. And React Primitives is Leland's attempt to clean it up. And unfortunately, it's not quite there. We can't quite use React Primitives due to some sort of small issues. But if the community, if we all get together and throw our support behind React Primitives, then these things don't really belong in React Native itself. Because React Native will, sure, know how to render a view, but it shouldn't actually define the view itself.
Is React Primitives the same as React Native Web?
Basically, yes. They share some code and they attempt to solve what is essentially the same problem. But what I suppose Leland's assumption with primitives is that you would have a different renderer instead of the DOM renderer. Because instead of using, you know, div tags and spans and a tags inside of your React code, you're using view and you're using touchable, which are these more abstract primitives. And so you wouldn't quite be able to use React DOM to render that because React DOM only knows what div is. So we need a compatibility renderer that will know how to render React primitives to the DOM.
Okay, I think.
Yeah, I think that as far as like React Native Web, the benefit there is that you're going to be able to almost just wholesale your code though, right? Because, I mean, it detects that you're doing that. Do you know if Leland's trying to get the same advantage so that you're not actually making one code? So you're saying that in your native code, you would just build everything off of React primitives as well?
Yeah, exactly. They would be fully shared so that your components, which are pretty simple things, your components basically are just the definition of a couple of views. They shouldn't really pull in all of React Native because that's I don't know if you know about the project. It's a very big, intense project that handles all of the, you know, adapting to the native code. It really doesn't belong in these leaf components, which are simply describing the way your views look.
Okay, I have one question. Let's go back to the navigator.
Sure.
You describe it pretty well. Like, actually, I have this problem. So you basically mentioning that there is a problem with the URL. Like, we don't even know what we're trying to do with the URL because URL is not an action. So what we did in my company, like what we actually did, we create something. So we're referring to that specific view with the URL, but transition to that view is controlling by action. So in this way, what we accomplished was we could actually take this one and then use it as a deep linking as well. So if somebody actually jumping into the URL from the browser, we know exactly which view we need to show, but as soon as the app is loaded, then we start loading the state and then we're firing the action. And then we know exactly whether the view has to actually come from top to bottom or left to right or just basically display on a screen.
So, okay, so you've got the action that fired into the app, but where did you get that app, that action from? Did it come straight from the URL or was there an intermediate step?
So, when the URL is basically being called, I know that which view I need to display. And
right.
Then based on the user credentials and all other things that I need to load before the app is boots up, then I know that, okay, I have to actually transit to this view first, something like that. And then we manage to do it by using some sort of like a decorator. So we decorate all the views with the path. So we just basically say, okay, here's our view. And then we decorate it with the a scene. And we say, okay, this is our path. And then we are actually passing a URL. And then in this way, I can easily, by looking at the code, I can easily see, okay, this is the path that I'm actually jumping into. But the action doesn't actually describe how I'm going to this view. So we managed to do this by using that one. So I was wondering, do you think is this a good idea? Should we actually jump back into the Navigator experimental?
I think that largely makes sense. I'm a little bit confused. So you say, first of all, I really do like the way that you put the URLs next to the components, because that's the way developers think. They think, okay, I've got a component and I'm going to have to figure out how to get here. So it seems like you largely have the API, right? But I am a little bit confused on how you go from knowing which view that you want to go into to getting your app state to be in the correct way. Because that's why I usually like to think of the URL as an action, because an action is what you'd use to go from one app state to the next app state. And what you're really trying to do is you're just trying to get your app into the state where the correct thing is being presented. So I still think that I can't quite see how you go from that action to transforming your state.
Okay, I see. So let's say I want to jump into the a profile page. So in order for me to actually jump into the profile page, I know the URL. Let's say it's called /user/ the user ID as an example. And then I jump into that URL, and then my app is started. And then during the app is being started, I get the URL. So I know exactly which path I need to go. And then I'll go through a procedure of, couple of functions to just create my state based on that URL that I'm going to, like whether you already logged in into the user or you have, in order for you to actually jump into that URL, you need to be authenticated. So I constructed all those URL, and then, I constructed all the states. And then I'll figure out whether I have to actually jump to that URL or I have to basically show the user some other views before actually jumping to that URL. Do I make myself clearer?
Yeah. No, it sounds like you've got a pretty conventional thing where, in order to define your state, you've got some functions that do that, right? We usually, like in the modern post-Redux era, we refer to the functions that output your state as reducers, right? And the reducers take in the previous state and the action. So in this case, the input is, the previous state was just your initial sort of empty state. And then what else went in order for you to get your final state? In modern Redux philosophy, that's considered the action. And it sounds like that's how you're using your URI. So I think that you do pretty much have the correct setup.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, so...
Can you kind of go into more about React Anywhere? I just looked at the project. This looks really, really interesting. Is this going to be something that you're going to plan on maintaining and growing and it being part of the React and React Native ecosystem?
Yeah, that's not even quite up to me. It's something that I basically just made in these past couple of days because, like I said, I'm interested in helping frame the problem around navigation so that people are thinking about it in the context where we can share code between web and native, because it is doable. So React Anywhere makes it super easy to share code between web and native, where it's basically happening for you by default, and you're sort of trapped into that configuration, and look, you're sharing code, now how are you going to navigate? And it's not super apparent. But React Anywhere, like I said, it's not quite up to me in terms of how far it goes, because this thing, it's already on GitHub. It's an open source project. People are going to fork it and do what they want with it. Whether or not it's something that we're going to really support for a really long time, it's not very clear. But if the community rallies behind it and shows a lot of excitement, then it's absolutely something that's going to happen. So if it's exciting to people, then I see no reason not to support it in the long term, just on a personal level, because one of the other fun things that React Anywhere does is it takes more code out of the developer's hands, so that you can very quickly go from having, you know, absolutely no code to having something that's kind of already ready to go and be more deployable, right? So when you do a React Native init, you get these iOS folders, this Android folder, where you can go and you can muck around the native code and you can do all sorts of fun stuff. And sometimes you want that, and that's great. But other times, you really just want all that stuff to be set up properly for you. So hopefully with React Anywhere, there's a path for this proper setup to be really easy, so that, sure, in today's version of React Anywhere, you know, it's, you know, you don't have everything supported. Like, you don't really have a button that says, okay, give me a Play Store APK, or give me an App Store binary to upload to Apple. But that's something we could do in the future, so that you could say, from your very bare bones application, which you don't have to evolve or maintain or anything like that, and if you'll be able to download a future version of React Anywhere and press a button and get this final APK. But this is something that, you know, really needs to be supported by the community, because I won't be able to do all these things myself.
Right. So so this is what you're seeing as the sort of the legacy of what's next after Navigation Experimental. This isn't sort of as Navigation Experimental evolves and gets released, it becomes whatever it should be named. There's going to be some kind of phase for that. And then the next thing is that you're envisioning the bigger picture is React Anywhere, which is going to sort of cross the bridge between web and native. Is that right?
Well, yeah, React Anywhere crosses the bridge for you, but it doesn't really give you the... at the moment, it doesn't quite give you all of the navigation fundamentals that you really need. But I'm thinking about building that in for sure. But it's actually not going to be the next iteration of Navigation Experimental, because, like I said earlier, Navigation Experimental is just the views. So if you want to use those views inside of React Anywhere, it should be a piece of cake. It should be just, you know, NPM install it in.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, so I guess the vision is to keep Navigation Experimental living on as the views, but we also need to create newer, nicer tools that help us with the actual routing. Because the views are independent from the routing, and that's sort of the real realization that we had with Navigation Experimental, is that these things should be isolated. And hopefully now we can solve the routing in a more abstract sense, now that we've sort of already abstracted away the views and made the views pretty clean.
Very cool. Now, to double back to Nader's question, do you plan on, when it's no longer experimental, having a name for it, or do you open that up, or what are people going to Google when they don't know what to do?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because it doesn't really make sense to call it React Native Navigation, because there's actually another library called React Native Navigation built by some of the fine folks at Wix, and that's actually more native than Navigation Experimental, because it's built using the native navigators. It's not built with JavaScript primitives like we have with Navigation Experimental. So like I said, it doesn't necessarily belong on React Native only. Like, it should work just fine on web, even though we don't really have a use case that's driving that at the moment. So we could theoretically call it React Navigation, but these things are very vague and hard to Google for. So if you guys have any nominations for what you'd like to call these views, like, I'm happy to hear it, because we definitely need some help when it comes to naming, as you can see.
Yeah, I'm sure if you throw a poll up on Twitter, you'll get some interesting, or maybe a question up on Twitter, probably get some interesting responses there.
Oh yeah, interesting. Exactly.
So can we talk maybe a little bit about the actual API and the differences between, so if someone's used to using the navigator, they're used to importing the navigator, they set up like a render, a function, and they pass in their navigator, and then they have, the render scene method. So, yep. Like, I guess that would be the main three parts, and then the initial route. So kind of if someone was going to be using the new experimental and kind of wanting to kind of just get started and just kind of make it work to kind of wrap their heads around the new API, can you kind of, I know it's kind of hard to describe over the radio or over, the podcast, but maybe just kind of maybe give an idea of what they need to kind of do, I guess, just to get started.
Right. Well, I guess one question that I should ask is whether or not they have Redux in their app or whether or not they're going to be using a lot of Redux, or if they have an existing app. Because if you have an existing app with the existing navigator, it can be pretty tricky to totally rewrite your app in a whole Redux-like fashion. So I guess the real question is you know, where are people coming from? And then I can advise for specific cases.
Yeah, so I'm assuming like the kind of main use case, from what I can tell, or I wouldn't say the main use case, but it seems like it's kind of built around the idea of having that reducer somewhere in your app. So like, I guess I'm kind of curious how you would go about implementing it without Redux, because there are some examples online about, you know, how to use it with Redux, but would you kind of set an external set of routes, you know, outside of the main component where you're declaring your navigator, and then you would kind of import there and kind of, you know, do your Redux style reducer away from there, or is there a better way about doing that?
Yeah, I mean, you don't necessarily need to use a reducer. You could just use component state. And you could just, in your component state, keep track of what are the different things that you currently have open. And then you can just assume that you're currently looking at, you know, in the traditional card stack, because it's a stack of cards, you're always looking at the top thing. So you can just kind of assume that, well, whatever the last thing is in this list is the thing that the user is currently looking at. So you can basically just have that list in your component state. Just literally have an array with a couple of things in there. They could be strings, or there could be objects with all sorts of information on them, but that's what lives in your state. And then in your render function, you look at the various things, and then you render, well, whatever it is you're interested in. The most common thing to render is the card stack, like I was just mentioning. So the navigation card stack, you'd render that, and then you'd pass in these various routes. And then just like with the navigator, how you have render scene, with a navigation card stack, you can also specify render scene. So this is telling the card stack how to go from a particular route of the several routes that you're giving it, how to render that particular route, so how to get that particular scene all good to go. So it's not too tricky to get up and running in a basic sense, but there is a little bit of legwork, because you do have to, you know, keep that logic in your state like you would with anything else in React.
When you say keep that logic in your state, is it basically similar to how you would have pushed and pop routes as far as the navigator is concerned? Is it similar to that, or is it a lot different as far as the API is concerned?
So yeah, you could basically implement navigator if you're interested. So like, if you want to have a method on your component called push, then inside of that method, you can look at your current routes that are in your state, and then you could add this new route that you're being told to push, and then you could do a set state with this new list with the added route. And now you've basically implemented the traditional push that Navigator once had, but you've implemented it just as a normal method on your component.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess what about using Redux? What would be the main or the most recommended way about going about doing that?
Sure. So we have a utility that allows you to output these navigation states. And the navigation state is just a list of routes, which are objects that have identifiers on them, and an index along there. So if you have like a couple of pages, right, and you want to start on the first page, but allow them to press next a couple of times to get to later pages, then you can use that index to point to the first page and then to point to later pages. But if you have a card stack, then that index is pretty much always going to point to the last route in your list of routes. And we have utilities that allow you to mutate these navigation states. And then like the views, you just basically pass these navigation states straight on into the view to render them. So if you're using Redux inside of your reducer, you'd use these navigation state utils. They're these utilities that allow you to do the push or do the pop without actually having to write the code to actually to do that. It's going to return a new navigation state for you. So you can use the state utils inside of your reducer to make sure that the reducer is always outputting the appropriate navigation state based on whatever action is currently happening. And then your view just uses Redux Connect to grab that navigation state and plop it on into your view. into the navigation card stack.
Okay, so I guess the navigation card stack would be most similar to the Navigator from the old navigation. What about some of these other elements? So I'm looking at the API right now. I see navigation view, navigation animated view, navigation card, and navigation header, as well as the navigation card stack. Can you kind of talk about how those are implemented? I guess if you're using the navigation card stack, you don't really need to worry about the navigation card itself. Is that correct?
Exactly. So so a couple of those things that you mentioned are actually gone. We once had navigation animated view, and we also had navigation view, which were basically doing the same thing. We've killed both of them and replaced them with something that does both of those roles, and that's navigation transitioner. A navigation transitioner is basically the heart of navigation experimental, because it allows you to totally customize the way the each different scene looks and the way the different scene animates, gesture. Navigation transitioner isn't aware of any of that. The navigation card is the actual view that comes in from the side. It's the actual view that you swipe away. So it handles the gesture and it handles its own animation. But it's only one scene, right? So navigation card stack is basically just the combination of navigation transitioner and navigation card. It basically just stitches them together in a pretty straightforward way. So that, you know, for most cases, navigation card stack is fine and it's what you want to use. But in cases where you actually want to customize the animation of a single card in your stack, then you can actually go down and use navigation transitioner instead. And instead of using navigation card, you can use whatever you want and customize it as much as you want. So you can mix and match now with your various views, as opposed to having everything baked into one component. Does that make sense? Did I draw a good picture of that for you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. Just looking at the API and listening to you talk about it kind of is making a lot of sense, because coming into it, it's hard to know, you know, looking at all the documentation and exactly, you know, where to get started, I guess. So I guess you're kind of saying, you know, the best way is to, you know, go ahead and implement the navigation card stack and go ahead and set up a reducer and go from there.
Yeah, but there's a pretty wide variety of other options now. So if you're not quite sold on Redux and you don't really want to use that sort of flow and you don't want to have to write your own reducer, then that's, you know, that's probably a sign that you might want to look at X Navigation, and that's Exponent's version basically of the navigation API. It's built using navigation experimental, right? It uses the transitioner beneath the scenes. But it's really a little bit more friendly to use, because it gives you that push and the pop that you're used to. And it also allows you to use components to express navigation logic. Like if you want to override the behavior of the back button, for example, you can just put a component in that overrides that back button behavior. So if you don't really want to mess around with reducers, then there are other alternatives. And if you are interested in more of a React Router approach, then there is React Native Router.
Yeah, can you kind of go into like some of the other navigation like libraries or open source projects out there that you've looked at and you might recommend for people listening? I know you already mentioned X Navigator and then React Native Router.
Yeah, so actually X Navigator is not the one that you want to use, because that's built on top of Navigator, which is not really being very well looked after these days. But X Navigation is the one that you do want to use. Again,
so there's an X Navigator and an X Navigation. Now, yeah, okay, I was confused.
Pretty crazy.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so I would recommend taking a look at that. I also think that React Router Native is probably the best you're ever going to see when it comes to bringing React Router to React Native. And if you're dead set on using the native navigation views rather than ones that are implemented in JavaScript, then your best option is probably React Native Navigation built by Wix. But there are some interesting philosophy differences between the different libraries. Like I said, I'm not the biggest fan of using the React Router approach, because they encourage you to encode your application state into the path, which isn't always possible, especially for native applications. And I'm not the, and you know, I do kind of prefer the Redux way of going about things rather than having a lot of imperative code throughout your application, a la XNavigation. It's really about what you prefer and about what you're comfortable with. I'm pretty excited about all of the activity in this space, and I'm not really worried about the distant future, even though it's going to take us a little while for us to iterate there.
Well, Eric, have you heard or have you looked at React Native Router Flux? I know it's got over 2,000 stars, and they claim to have, like, you know, the existing API, and they kind of jumped the bridge with going with the experimenter, navigation experimental, and they try to work with that a bit. So do you have any opinions that you formed on that particular library? I saw Leland Richardson also contributed to that as well.
Yeah, that one was, I had been paying attention to that up until recently, because I know they had been built on the old Navigator, I believe, and they've been, there's a fork to switch over to Navigation Experimental, which can be a tricky thing to do because it's so different. So I haven't paid too close attention to that one. I can't quite fully comment on it. But one of the things that I sort of feel that, you know, not everyone else is, you know, fully subscribed to, but I think that for the most part, your navigation is just, they're just views, right? So if we can decouple the views themselves from all of the logic that it takes to understand what's happening with the navigation, then we're going to wind up in a much more maintainable state. So I really like to think of, you know, our views as being independent, right? Where we can, you know, keep track of the navigation state as part of our application state, because it is part of our application state. And we can use Redux or whatever else that we want to manage that. Like, there's, you know, Flux and Redux and all these various things in that space. And the concerns are really the same with other views. So I would definitely caution against any library that has a lot of, like, really magical things going on where you know, you construct these sort of, you know, construct a labyrinth in comparison to a library that basically just lets you use views like you usually use them, but hopefully they're nice views and hopefully there are some nice utilities to manage your state.
So I guess the big question that I get from a lot of people is, if they're starting a new project today, what navigator should they use? And I know that it's kind of a tricky question because it kind of depends on a few things, but if someone was to come to you and ask you that question right now, like, what direction would you kind of point them in?
Yeah. If they want to go with the normal, or sort of, I don't know about normal, but if they want to go with a sort of modern Redux app philosophy, where, you know, you keep all of your state for your whole application kind of at the top level of your app inside of a store, and you just have views rendering for everything else, in that case, then you can just use Navigation Experimental as it is. You know, it's going to be pretty natural for you to use. But if you are interested in more of an imperative approach where you can sort of make method calls to navigate throughout your application in a way similar to the previous navigator, then I would definitely recommend XNavigation. We're working relatively closely with Xponent, so these things aren't going to sort of diverge in dangerous ways. And lastly, if you are really dead set on the React Router API and that way of specifying your paths and components in that tree of routes, then yeah, definitely take a look at React Router Native. I'm not really professing to have everything solved, because even though I do really like the way Navigation Experimental lets you really be in control and lets you really do things the way that you want to do, it can also be a little overwhelming for someone who's new to React Native or doesn't really know about all of the setup and environmental things. So these other libraries are definitely good for appeasing that. But if you are comfortable with Redux, then you're probably going to have a pretty good time with just Navigation Experimental.
That's awesome. I'm going to find a way to kind of put what you just said into a blog post or something, because I just had a ton of people asking me that question lately. And I'm sure you've had a lot of people asking that. It's always that question of, like, you know, what should we use at this moment in time? And I think you kind of covered that really well. So that's awesome.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, definitely. So what are you guys working on outside of React Native, like, and as far as actually implementing things using React Native, but not in the open source project itself, but in the actual company? What are you guys doing with React Native right now, and where do you see the project headed within the company
Sure. Yeah. There's sort of two very exciting directions that I see the React Native teams being, you know, working towards. And one recent direction that everyone's sort of been rallying for and trying to make work really well is the ability to run React in, you know, very performance constrained environments on older phones, and really make it so that we can match some, you know, start to match some of the performance constraints around some cases where we're improving Relay to make it so that it performs better in low network environments, and other things just in terms of making sure that React starts up really fast. So we have a lot of efforts going to make it so that React performs well on you know, lower end Android phones and constrained network environments. And then I also see a lot of really exciting movement that we can't really go into many details with because it's still very exploratory, but we're trying to get React Native into newsfeed. And newsfeed is a very, very performance constrained environment. It's very complicated and intense. And there's been a lot of technologies that have tried to get into newsfeed, but just haven't quite made it. And React is right on the cusp there. Like, we're going to get it in, but by the time React Native is integrated into newsfeed, it might be something entirely different under the hood. So we can't really go into detail until we actually have it figured out, because right now we're basically just tearing some things apart, you know, trying to figure out if this is something that's actually going to work. But I'm very confident that our team is going to figure it out. And, you know, a year from now, React Native might be very different under the hood, but all the things that you love about it today are still going to be the same.
Awesome. Yeah, that's exciting to know that they're investing that heavily in React Native and they're going to be trusting it to run something like the newsfeed. I mean, it's such a big part of it is kind of what Facebook is, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. On that topic of trying to get React Native into the newsfeed, I know that a lot of companies look to React Native because they have existing developers that know JavaScript and they have very few mobile developers. It seems like Facebook has obviously the resources to have native developers on staff. So what are the motivations other than just having React Native in the newsfeed are there for getting it into the newsfeed?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, React is exciting for a couple of reasons. And maybe the reason that's most exciting to newsfeed developers is the ability to quickly iterate. So it allows you to just change things so fast. And with hot reloading and most often just live reloading, we're able to just work so much faster than with a native toolchain. And also, of course, run on multiple platforms, which, as you said, Facebook can afford to not, we can afford to duplicate the work and build something on iOS and on Android. But that actually comes at a big cost, right? Because that's an extra developer that we need to have spend doing redundant work. So that's another really big motivation there. And one of the big things in my mind is that when we build things, we always have to test them. We have to, you know, do an A/B test basically, where we put it out into the wild and we'll see how many people interact with it and how well something performs. And these tests, you know, they can be a lot of work just to make an experiment to see if something is going to work, and we just don't know. It's really unfortunate, but oftentimes we'll only test things on one environment, right? Like, there might be an Android team and they're going to experiment by running a specific test, but they will only run that test on Android. So there's huge amounts of data that they could be getting if they could just run that test on iOS too. But that doesn't happen when different code bases. So my thought is that instead of having duplicate developers working on different platforms, we can have duplicate developers working on different features, and they'll be able to run their tests on every platform. So they won't be able to miss, they won't have to miss out on any of the data that could be potentially coming back to inform the decision for their product. So that's why it's just so exciting to me that we get more React
development. So interesting to hear. I mean, that is just crazy. So it's almost like a different way of thinking about structuring teams. Instead of you're an iOS developer, you're an Android developer, it's like you're a image like developer that, you know, creates like maybe an image feed or something, but you need to implement it across all these platforms. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Totally. It's a slow change, and, you know, for a while we've been just excited about building, you know, like being able to build a feature and not having to build the feature twice. But you know, at Facebook scale, like we already have the feature built in some cases, and we want to be running tests on it. But it's hard to run these tests if we can't, you know, if we actually have to build, you know, and the test could be very simple, right? It could just be like, see what it's like to move this button to the other side of the screen, or move this button a little bit. And we would have to duplicate that work on iOS and Android and web. So I'm really excited for the time that's, you know, slowly coming, where we only have to move that button once, and we can get the data coming back from the results to see how the users respond to this change from every different platform.
So before we wrap it up, is there anything else that you guys want to talk about? Or do you have any questions or anything like that? Or Eric, do you have anything else that we haven't really touched on?
No, I'm just I'm excited to help the community out, you know, figure these troubles with navigation, and I'm excited for React Anywhere because it allows people to just really quickly get up and running in this cross-platform environment and finally understand how complicated it is to have code that runs well with, you know, navigating between web and native.
Yeah, one very quick question, since you are actually working on the project. When are we going to see the state? Well, it's already stable, but since this keeps moving like every 2 weeks, it's a little bit painful for a very large project to, let's say, if there is a break changes or something that we need to actually refactor the entire code. When do we see something that can at least give us at least a couple of months before they release the next version? Kind of like maybe instead of like 2 weeks. 2 weeks is pretty good for maybe last year because all the bugs was keep fixing. But now the way that I see it, it's kind of like stable for us. But every time, every 2 weeks or every month, we actually need to spend at least 3 days to just go over the entire app to make sure that everything is going to work with the entire thing. So is there any plan on Facebook that they want to basically make the 2 weeks a little bit longer, maybe a month or 2 months at least? Or no, you guys are going to go 2 weeks per year?
So that's an interesting question. I've heard a little bit of concerns in this regard, but I don't know of any plans to adjust the pace at which we release. But I'm curious because if it's been getting more stable, it shouldn't be taking you very long to upgrade each version, right? And in no cases should you really need to like re-architect your app or, you know, tear it apart like you were saying. The idea behind releasing frequently is that makes it so that any one release that you have to upgrade to isn't too painful. And, you know, maybe last year, like that was very painful because we were moving so quickly. But as you say now, like our APIs are stabilizing, things are getting a little less thrashy. So you should be able to upgrade every 2 weeks without too much pain. And if you're, you know, crazy, if you want to, you know, really live on the bleeding edge, like, you know, we do at Facebook, you can actually just point your code to master and, you know, you can actually run yeah.
Well, the whole, I completely understand. The thing is, the React Native is one side, but there is a very large number of the open source projects. And what we had to do, like if you actually using any source open source project, and every 2 weeks something is actually changing, and if those, I know this is kind of like not the Facebook problem. This is kind of like an open source project.
Sure.
But if the life cycle, if the releasing of the React Native was a little bit longer, at least it gives open source contributors or maintainers a little bit more time to maintain their code so people can actually adjust their code. So most of the time, it's not, I guess the only major refactor was 27. That was basically the Android revamp. It just basically changing the entire internal of the Android. That caused a little bit of the delay for a lot of open source projects. But other than that, everything from the React Native side is okay. But my main concern is the open source community, because everything in React Native is open source. and like all the modules that we are actually using is also open source. And then it's kind of like we have to keep working until the maintainer, or we have to do a lot of pull requests. It's kind of like it's getting into a point that it's going to explode eventually, because it's going to be because all the open source community are not basically, they have to actually find the time to fix their bug and then accept the pull request. And it's just going to be a pain. I'm actually facing a lot of painful situation at this moment. Like a lot of contributors, I have to actually fork around like a 10 open source project in order to, and I have to actually fix it and do a lot of pull requests, but it has never been accepted. And I keep using the fork version, and then eventually we write our own in order to get into the project. And this is the only problem that I see. It's not, I don't know if anybody else is actually seeing this problem, but we are actually facing this problem heavily. So,
Ali, you know, we face the same thing often, and we're doing a lot of the contributions. 27 was a big one. Before that, including React instead of React Native was another big one. I know we've got a couple of blog posts we're throwing around as like the history of upgrade pains and stuff. But, you know, if you think about it in a little bit different light, it actually kind of, it's a little bit more sunlight on what's going on. So if you've made a pull request to a project and it hasn't, they're not accepting the PR and it looks like it's kind of aging out, that's actually not a bad way to identify a weakness in the system that could have came along anyway. I mean, so I feel like, you know, the benefits of Facebook and they're releasing early, it also, at the same time, it kind of gives us this sort of, the open source is the answer. And you're right, not everybody can contribute to everything and work on everything. And that does, I mean, I do spend a good bit of time working in open source as well, but to our own benefit, because there's a lot of projects where somebody created, you know, a repo and they're getting pull requests all the time. They're not even updating it anymore. It's just the community has like grabbed on with their teeth and their claws and they said, this is going to survive. And so I think like at the same time, it brings us all together as well, you know, and it's not like Facebook could, I'm saying like the releases at the same time, I don't want them to stop updating and stop making it better. So it's like a my gold is so heavy kind of problem at the same time. I love it and I hate it, but I feel, you know, they're stabilizing.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, one of the interesting things is at Facebook, everyone points to each other's master code. So things are sort of breaking left and right, but at the same time, that allows us to understand what's breaking and roll back the changes that broke things and sort of stay ahead of the curve. So we're always on each other's master. Even though that sounds really terrifying, it really allows for better communication and it allows us to resolve issues that come up even faster. So I'd really like to see, it'd be pretty amazing, I think, if the open source community could sort of move towards the monorepo approach, where everyone's just looking at their most unstable stuff. So that way we can start giving feedback to each other and say, oh, hey, this API is awesome because I saw it in your master, you landed it this morning. Or, oh, this thing broke me, so I had to fork your project and revert that thing you did.
Okay, yeah. It's the only problem here is we're not Facebook, unfortunately. We don't have massive amount of time and power and things. We are just a small company trying to survive. So if something is actually not launching in, like if you have some problems, and then we have to actually, days and night, we have to start working on it to get it to work. And on Facebook side, it's totally different. I guess it on the pointing to the master is completely fine from your side. But from us, it has to be stable because we're going to launch tomorrow. And if something goes wrong, we're going to lose the deal. And it's going to be a lot of... You work at the startup company. So everything is like that. So
yep. When push comes to shove, you've got to make it work. But yeah, I mean, exactly. You shouldn't be releasing off of master tomorrow. You should have been stabilizing for this past week, in which case you can make sure that you're going to be stable. And yeah, that's, you know, if you upgrade every 2 weeks, then you're sort of delaying your pain. You're ignoring all the problems that you're going to have for 2 weeks until they're too late. And then you start addressing all of them at once, as opposed to if you're on master, then, you know, sure, this pain would happen sort of continuously, but it also wouldn't happen in these really sharp, painful bursts where you need to swallow all of the changes at once.
Well, that's true. I'm going to try it from tomorrow. I'm just going to point to the master and see what's going to happen, but I'll let you know.
I think it's going to take a while for the community to adjust and really make that okay. but yeah, if we all do that, you know, the world would be a better place. So
yeah. Okay. I'll do it tomorrow.
Yeah. It's really cool to hear about how both of your companies, you know, how you guys work internally as far as your open source projects that you depend on and stuff. It's pretty cool to hear how you guys actually are dealing with that. So thanks for that. Yeah. So I think we're going to get to the picks in just a second, but I think what might be really cool, Eric, if like one day in the next couple of months, if you do feel like you have the time to come back on, maybe talking about how this whole paradigm as far as the cross-stack engineering idea, as far as, you know, how the future of that is, you know, just talking about that subject in general, I think that might be a pretty cool discussion. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool. So, I guess we'll go ahead and get to our picks. Ali, do you have any picks tonight?
Well, I do. We recently switched our testing to Jest. And, oh, man. The version 5, it's kind of like putting a NOS into your car. Like, it's just amazing. Like, it's super fast. I recommend to everyone to whatever they're using, just switch to Jest for testing framework. We loved it so much. And then thanks for pushing it into the number 15.
Okay, cool. Kevin, do you have any picks?
Yeah, I have three. One that's React Native related is actually a page that I found on the React Native site called Showcase. It's a showcase of all of the different apps that use React Native. And so I think it's a nice resource to point people to that are just curious about who is using React Native right now and on the App Store, that you can go download and use one of the apps. Second pick is a book called A Beautiful Constraint, and it's a pretty interesting book about constraints and how they work and how you can work with a constraint to help you achieve your goals. There's a lot of examples and real world use cases from everything from marketing to science experiments that are cited in the book. So it's an awesome read. I'm about 3/4 of the way through it. Highly recommend it. And then final pick is episode 228 of the JavaScript Jabber podcast with our host Natter and Mike Grabowski was on it a couple of weeks ago. It was an awesome listen, and I think everyone should check it out.
Okay. Gant, do you have any picks?
Yeah, there's a fantastic repo. Has nothing to do with React right now. It's written in Python, but it's called Amazing QR Codes, or the QR Code repo. And if you've been watching some trending stuff on GitHub, you've probably seen it. But it's amazing-qrcode.com. And what it does is you can upload any animated GIF or picture, and then it'll place it seamlessly into a QR code for you. I know QR codes are dead, but this I can't stand how fun this is, making really crazy QR codes and sending them to people.
Very cool. Eric, do you have any picks?
Sure. I'm not sure. This feels like it's the sort of thing that will have gotten picked before, but have you guys heard of a show called Black Mirror?
I don't believe so.
I love that show.
Oh man, Black Mirror is a piece of work. It's this really sort of dark, gritty BBC series where every show is like a separate vignette, separate story. They're all very kind of sci-fi, but they're not really out of this world, future tech that we'll never reach. It's all technology that is quite tangible by today's standards. And it's some of these things are just very mind blowing, and they will really make you question a lot of the tech that we have available in today's world. So I really hope you guys check it out.
Yeah, plus one on that. That is a fantastic series. I started watching it and I binge watched all of them.
So oh, yeah. Where can you watch it? Is it on Netflix?
It's it can be. You'll have to hunt it down. I'm not quite sure.
Okay. Cool. Okay. I have two picks. The first one is a book by Tyler Cohen. He's an economist, and it's called "Average Is Over: Powering America Beyond the Age of the Great Stagnation." But it's more actually about automation and how people are going to be working with computers in the future, and how you can kind of understand what's going to happen over the next 10, 20, 30 years as far as the economy is concerned, and how, you know, you can kind of understand what you need to do in your own personal life and job to kind of take advantage of that, I guess. So it's a really interesting book. I would recommend anyone to take a look at it. And then my second pick is a little self-serving. I released my first React Native open source project called React Native Elements, and it's under the React Native Community repo. So I'd really appreciate it if people would go in and check it out and kind of submit issues or comments about what they'd like to see added to it. It's basically a UI toolkit or a UI library for quickly implementing features in React Native. So if you want a button or a text input or something like that that's already been styled for you and kind of gives you a lot of functionality out of the box, you can kind of just install it and start working with it. So check that out. Okay, well, that wraps up episode 40 of React Native Radio. Eric, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll hopefully have you on again.
Sounds like fun.